welcome Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waving for the video portion of the show, we have attorney Anthony Bandiero, you know, our search and seizure expert. So thanks so much for being on the show with Blue the Gold. He founded Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. Also, Jeff Weninger at jeffweninger.com, retired LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant. He's also the author of the new book coming out. Not out yet. It's coming up, though, On Thin Ice. And you can also get information on that at jeffweninger.com or onthinicebook.com. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. A shout-out to our sponsors, Gauls at Gauls.com, our title sponsor, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. I think we're in our seventh week on satellite radio now. It's been fantastic. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're reaching about 1.5 million followers right now. Also, Two Bells, they built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. And since Jeff is on the show, Jeff, are we doing the $20 giveaway for the Two Bells gift card? We do that today? All right, good. So I've got the code, so I will be shipping that out as well. So I'll tell you guys how to enter that contest in a few. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thank you for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Assuming that time permits, guys, we're going to start off with a bang here. Michigan's top court says that police cannot search cars solely because of the odor of cannabis. Now, we've covered stories like this around the country, and Anthony Bandiero, this is his wheelhouse, and he's going to provide some insight into this as well. And if you're living in a jurisdiction where they have not legalized quantities of marijuana, and we're talking about, you know, at the state level, or even more localized in the county or the city, he's gonna give you some insight on how to handle that. And we also got some other ones. We got some stories with video components as well. So we have an Orange County deputies, plural. They fatally shoot a guy armed with a knife who tries to stab a deputy. You know, it should have been two deputies shooting the bad guy, but it was one deputy shooting the bad guy, and he's by himself while the partner's out in the hallway. Thought it was more important to get on the radio and have a conversation with dispatch instead of helping his partner out. I got serious issues with that, but we'll be talking. Then we have Orange County deputy shoots a armed man who punches him multiple times. And Anthony Bandiero was talking about that before the show started. That's scary. Atlanta board denies an appeal of an officer fired over a deadly traffic stop. You know, I don't know how this one slipped through the cracks. I meant to cover that earlier, but we haven't talked about it yet, so I'm looking forward to that. Grand Rapids police, they released body cam in response to a viral video of an arrest. And then we got Houston police. Those guys fatally shoot a suspect who had a baseball bat and a chunk of concrete in his hand. And then if we have time to get to it, another body cam, it shows Salt Lake City police. They shoot and kill an armed guy who broke into his ex-wife's home. So, yeah, we got a lot of stuff to cover. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Our first one is a main story. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. Fox17online.com, that is the source. Michigan's top court says that the police cannot search cars solely because of cannabis odor. So it just starting off here, we're in Detroit. And this is really, even though it's a Fox News article, I'm seeing more and more of the Fox articles coming from the Associated Press, which is kind of scary because that's what Police One does. They get their articles from, you know, mainly from the AP Newswire. So the odor of cannabis, according to article, alone is not sufficient reason for police to search a car without a warrant, according to the Michigan Supreme Court. And this came out on Wednesday. It said that in a 5-1 opinion, the court threw out gun charges against a man whose car was searched in Detroit. And that happened back in 2020. Now, Michigan voters in 2018, they legalized the possession and use of small amounts of cannabis by people who are at least at the age of 21. But it cannot be used inside a vehicle. And here's a quote from Justice Megan Kavanaugh saying that the smell of marijuana might just as likely indicate that the person in possession of a legal amount of marijuana recently used marijuana legally or was simply in the presence of someone else who was using the marijuana. It says that it no longer constitutes probable cause sufficient to support a search for contraband. And that, of course, was Justice Kavanaugh. Two lower courts that reached the same conclusion. So they took it up to the to the Michigan Supreme Court. Now, elsewhere in Illinois, the Illinois Supreme Court made a similar ruling. That happened in last September. The state legalized the possession of cannabis in 2019. And here's a quote from Justice P. Scott Neville Jr. saying that there are now a myriad of situations where cannabis can be used and possessed, and smelling and the smell resulting from that legal use and possession is not indicative of the commission of a criminal offense. So that's the that's why you don't have the justification to search, which I have to admit makes sense. In the Michigan case, the lone dissenter, Justice Brian Zahara, and this is not a big deal, but he actually favored returning the case to the Detroit area court to determine whether there was any other evidence that supported the search of the car. So he wanted to remand it back to the lower court. So there's a lot to unpack. And I know that we're seeing these state to state now more and more. And then we got the whole federal thing, which really doesn't affect the state law in this case. Anthony Bandero, your take on this.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, I'm a search and seizure instructor. This is what I do for a living. And this issue has come up for years. And I think a couple of things are, you know, in the cops' mind. Number one is, you know, they're not, quite frankly, marijuana is a crutch. Okay. It's the easiest way to get into motor vehicles. You know, the smell of cannabis is so unique. It's also very pungent. It's, you know, so when you partake in that, you know, cannabis, you know, you are basically broadcasting to the world that you smoke this stuff. Right. So the point is that for years and years and years, we have been getting into cars with marijuana. And now that these states are legalizing, decriminalizing and so forth, and also medical marijuana. And, you know, there's a case from your state, Florida, that dealt with this. Now that we have this legalized marijuana, it's throwing a monkey wrench into their what they normally do. Right. So going back to the issue at hand, it totally makes sense that if the state has legalized recreational use marijuana and a person can have that marijuana on, you know, on their person, in their car and so forth, that just smelling it alone is not probable cause for anything, because apparently they're engaging in a lawful activity. Now, some cops will say, well, it's still federally illegal. Well, if you want to go get deputized as a federal agent, you know, and become a task force officer, that might be, you know, change of fact, change answer. But at the end of the day, Michigan officers don't have probable cause. One more thing, Chip, that the cops, probably the biggest issue that I see is they'll say, but Anthony, we still want to do a quote unquote, a compliance check. We want to make sure that they're complying with state law, because they're only allowed to have up to an ounce. Or if you're crazy in New Jersey, 6 ounces. And if you live in New Jersey, you need 6 ounces of weed too. But the point is, okay, they want to do what's called like a compliance check. They want to make sure that the purse is not over the amount. And how does that argument go? What other law do we do compliance checks on, right? You know, just for people in their motor vehicles. Do we make sure that they don't have too many pills in their pill bottles, make sure they don't, you know, they pay their taxes on their alcohol and their cigarettes? We don't do any compliance checks on anything else, but they want to do it on marijuana. The key here is, I think the court would, you know, made it kind of clear, is that the key here is you have to articulate something more than possessing a legal substance, something that makes them illegal, whether you're under 21, whether you're under the influence, whether you have this overwhelming odor of raw marijuana, which is indicative of more than an ounce, something like that. But I will correct one thing, the Illinois court cases. Illinois was really dealing with burnt marijuana and so forth, and saying that burnt marijuana and just being able to articulate that at one point smoked in their car in and of itself is not probable cause, because you have to prove that they smoked in the car and they committed a here and now violation. In other words, they could have been smoking that devil's lettuce in their garage, and which would not make it presumably illegal because they're in their house and so forth. But Illinois has the only law in the books. You ready for this, Chip? Are you sitting down? Odor proof containers for raw marijuana. That is true. Right. That's interesting. And they actually upheld that. They said that when the legislature passed odor proof, it has to be odor proof, whether it's retail packaging or your whatever. And so if you do pull over a car in Illinois as it stands today and you smell the odor of raw marijuana, you can articulate that, then you can actually search that car because they're not complying with the container laws.
Wow.
Yeah. And look, if you want, I'll just say one more thing. From your state, you guys had from Florida, you guys had a recent case where a dog alerted to a vehicle. The dog was proofed on marijuana, so cocaine, marijuana, fentanyl, and so forth, right? It alerted. The cop did not ask this person, do you have a medical marijuana card, which is legal in Florida, not recreational use, but medical use. Did not ask that threshold issue. Searched the car, found evidence of contraband, you know, found contraband and went to court, and the court threw it out. Why? Because the dog could have been alerting on a legal substance, because you just don't know. You haven't qualified that person. They could have medical marijuana. And that's the issues that cops are facing out there. They got to do a little bit more investigation. And this is not 1985 policing anymore when it comes to marijuana. You have to articulate the illegal part of it.
Wow. you know, a good take. I mean, it's making my mind think now, you know, if I was still on the street, there's a lot of things to consider. And I am standing up. Thanks for asking and assuming that I was, you know, sitting down. So thank you. I thought I would just get that out because I know it's coming from Jeff. So I just thought I might as well just, you know, make a joke on myself before Jeff hits me.
Totally. Yeah. So that's my take on it, but it's an interesting topic, and it's definitely, when I teach my cops around the nation, in California and Colorado, they got it under control. But can I just say one thing? All these states, Colorado, California, Nevada, they all went through the same growing pains. They all were doing the same thing. After marijuana became legalized, they were tossing cars, searching them, because they didn't understand the new rules. And I don't know why, but I think it's kind of straightforward. But
how is it between California and Ohio, where you're now at, Jeff?
Well, Ohio, they legalized marijuana 2 years ago, so it's very similar. But, you know, the real challenge here is, and really, like Anthony said, the smell of marijuana and using that as the rationale for why you're going to search a car was easy, but it's no longer legal. And the challenge for law enforcement agencies is to ensure that their officers actually have some training in drug recognition and being able to articulate why they think somebody may be under the influence. So, because this is just a problem if it's just possession, but if you can articulate under the influence while in the car and driving, it's a whole different game.
Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we know we can buy our gear from a lot of different places, especially if you're looking online. But I want to remind everybody about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. I don't know of a company that fits that bill better or does it better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And listen to this. They're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to give you a code where you automatically get 15% off your next order at Gauls.com. It's radio 15. So type in radio 15. That'll get you 15% off your next purchase at Gauls.com until June the 30th. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends at Gauls.com. Again, the website is Gauls.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block. I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Anthony Bandiero, a search and seizure expert, also LAPD, former commander Jeff Winninger. He is retired as a lieutenant. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. And Jeff, I'm sorry that attorney Anthony Bandiero only gave you about like 20 seconds to talk before the commercial break, but there'll be a little something extra in your paycheck for that, Anthony. But Jeff, go ahead. I know you had some other words about the new Michigan Supreme Court decision on the odor of cannabis alone not being enough PC in order to search the car.
Well, really, like I've always said, one of the greatest tools that any law enforcement officer will have is the gray matter between their ears, and it's understanding the law. And if you understand the law, this isn't even a hiccup. This will actually make you a better cop, because you'll want to get the training and the expertise as a drug recognition expert, where you can identify and articulate your probable cause for suspecting that somebody is under the influence operating a motor vehicle, and then you own it. Then you can make the search. You can search it incident to arrest, you know, an impound search, and all whatever you got going on. But you know, my experience with the LAPD was, vast majority of officers, they weren't even, you know, really fluent in knowing how to manage a driving under the influence investigation, because they just didn't have the experience. And I fortunately had it, because we have, with the LAPD, after you finish your probation, you have a mandatory transfer and you go wherever this department needs you. And I went to traffic, and, you know, I wasn't happy about that, but I had a very wise partner that said, listen, it's not about where you're assigned. It's about the reputation that you're going to develop while you're assigned there. So you go there and you be the best traffic cop you can be. So I went to all these schools. I became a drug recognition expert. And then I was able to use that when I went back out into the field, handling radio calls and training probationers as a field training officer and things. And I was a go-to guy, because all this stuff was real easy. because I had the training and the background and experience. The vast majority of officers on the LAPD didn't. So it's rather than looking at this as a negative thing, look at it as an opportunity to become more well-versed in your investigations to get to conduct the searches that you want to conduct when you suspect certain things are occurring. It's all about doing it legally. So,
wow, I love it. Now, Anthony, I got to tell you something. This is on a different topic, but is there anything else you wanted to add on this story before I kind of like pivot and do something else?
I don't think so, unless you want me to, but no, I'm fine.
All right, good. So, but I find it fascinating. But look, anyone watching the show who is active, make sure you have your ducks in a row. And if your agency is not working with a local SAO, you know, state attorney's office or district attorney's office, make sure they get the information, you know, so that you guys just aren't making these kinds of mistakes where the cases are going to get thrown out. There's no excuse for it. And Jeff brought up a good point. It'll help you become a better police officer. Cops are great about understanding the law. And I don't want to say they don't, I'm not talking about circumventing the law, but they know how to work the system and to, you know, to abide by the law, but they'll get the job done when they need to and when they're motivated to do so. So I wanted to tell you that when a lot of people are writing books like Jeff went and Jern stuff. So we have Chief Chris Noller from the Pueblo Police Department in Colorado on. And so when people are holding up books, he just holds one of your books up and it says Anthony Bandera, here's one of your search and seizure books that he holds up there. You know, but he's plugging you when he does it. So I love, yeah, I think you'd appreciate that. Is that nice?
Yeah, so it is nice. So he bought my book. That means he fed my kid for a day. I can't thank him enough. That's good.
There you go. Well, if you guys are ready, we've got a story with a video component that I know you're going to want to cover. So we got two back to back. So this first one, it is at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. And look, for people that are listening audibly, your favorite podcast or radio station, please stay loyal to the outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. We will describe in great detail what's going on so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to watch, all you have to do is go to a Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable. You can also type in law enforcement talk show and it'll still pop up. And our producer takes a copy of the live show from the day before. He'll embed every video we talk about as we talk about it. Pictures of the good guys and the bad guys pop up. And that goes up at 9 o'clock in the morning on Eastern time, the very next day, Tuesday through Saturday on a Rumble channel. So it's a great way to watch a show. Orange County deputies fatally shoot a man armed with a knife who tries to stab a deputy.
TJ.
What's up? Drop that phone.
Shit. County, shots fired, shots fired. Borders, you okay? Borders, you okay? Yeah. Fuck. County, shots fired.
DJ.
That's up. Drop that fucking head.
Yet again, how in the world this deputy did not get stabbed? He went to the hospital with injuries, but it wasn't stab wounds. Orange County, Florida, guy having a mental health crisis was shot and killed by an Orange County Sheriff's Office deputy here in Florida on Saturday, according to Sheriff John Mina. Now, the Orange County deputies, they responded after receiving a 911 call about a guy that's acting erratically in the area. So when they get to the home, they're talking to the guy's father. And he tells them that his son is in a bedroom and that he has a knife. The deputies, you know, look, there's going to be debate on how the best way to handle something like this. He's isolated in his room. He's in the house. Dad's there. But they go back. They want to talk to him. For 5 minutes, they're trying to get him to come out of the room. Well, sure enough, he comes out of the room. There's three deputies there, but he focuses his sights on the closest deputy, which is standing right in the doorway of a bathroom. So he's got a knife in his hand. The deputy recognizes the knife. Deputy draws his gun as he's walking backwards. Deputy, well, anyhow, we're in the initial body cam video. Now they're at a screenshot. So all we hear is the gunfire going off. And one of the backup deputies that's in the hallway gets on his radio. And I'm just saying this from memory because I remember it vividly. He gets on, he starts talking to dispatch, shots fired. So I obviously have an issue with him. Instead of being worried about the sergeant who was falling backwards into a bathtub with a bad guy with a knife laying on top of him, this guy is, it's more important for him to go on a dispatch. Now, maybe you guys feel differently. I don't know. I'm just getting that out. I just have to vent about that. Then our guy gets off the radio, finally goes in, and he sees the bad guy laying on top of the sergeant. When you see the sergeant's body cam, and I know we're coming up on a commercial break here, the bad guy is definitely swiping at him, but they say he was grabbing for the sergeant's gun at the same time. Amazingly, the sergeant was able to get the shots off, neutralize the threat, and the guy, you know, the dead guy's laying on top of him. We're going to cover more about this in a second, guys, but it's time for a second commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com, and they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yeah, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that can normally only produce less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, it virtually eliminates weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already taken to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up, it's Probable Cause Deep Dive on June the 18th today. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in Blue and step up your legal game because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show, joined by attorney Anthony Bandiero and retired LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger. We left off talking about Orange County deputies fatally shooting. Well, it's a deputy, single guy, fatally shooting a bad guy armed with a knife who tries to stab the deputy as he's advancing on the deputy with a knife. And the deputy's in like a little bathroom and they both fall into the tub as the deputy's unloading the gun on him and fighting off the knife and trying to keep the guy from grabbing his gun at the same time. It was horrific, a great ending. I don't know how. It goes on to say that the sheriff said three deputies were in the hallway inside the home when he barged out of the bedroom with a knife. The man, it says, allegedly tried to stab, you know, one of the deputies at the scene, grabbed at the deputy's gun. Of course, the deputy had the gun out at the time. That makes sense. It was right, you know, there, close quarters. The deputy discharged his weapon, striking the man several times. The man later died. He's been identified as Terry Washington Jr. And the deputy was seen being loaded into the ambulance. And during the altercation, when he fell back into the tub, he hit his head in the back of his head. He had a laceration that had to be taken care of at the hospital. But I understand that he's going to be okay. So that's what we got. We got almost 10 minutes to before our next commercial break. What do you guys think about this one? And I know you're waiting for the next one, Anthony. But Jeff, why don't you start us off on this one?
Yeah, when I watched it, you know, I got personal experience where it really, the way they were deployed on that door, the bedroom door, is very, very critical in the sense that they were deployed on both sides of the door and their intent on being at the door, they're knocking on it and asking the individual to come out. Big problem. And the reason I say that, I had a classmate that I was very close to that was killed in 2004 from friendly fire, where there was an individual where they responded to a radio call at a Motel 6, and they deployed opposite sides of the door. The guy comes out. Turns out the gun that he had was a pellet gun, but he starts firing at the deputies, and the rounds were fired by the deputies. Suspect was shot and killed, but my partner was struck in the neck. And this happened on June 9th of 2004, and he died on the 15th, actually. And I remember that because that's my brother's birthday as well. But he was shot in the neck and he died. And so when you're deploying on a door like that and your intent is to get the person to come out, you never want to be set up a crossfire scenario. You really want to look at that door and line up linearly and decide which side based on what's going to give you the largest perspective when that door is open in regards to your line of sight into the room. And So it was problematic from the tactical deployment on the door. And it, like you said, I saw that. And yes, that that officer was lucky, or sergeant was lucky, that he wasn't stabbed. But at the same time, we're lucky there wasn't a crossfire scenario where you know, the other deputy was struck by the deputies who was firing rounds. So that's the real takeaway for me. And that's because there's a a personal loss as a result of a lesson learned from that type of deployment on a door.
Wow. You know, Anthony, I know you were a former officer as well. A lot of people may not realize that. And, you know, there are some guys that would argue that this was not a law enforcement situation, and there should not have been a law enforcement response. You know, the guy is in his own home. He's in his bedroom. Yeah, he's got a knife acting erratically, but, you know, calling law enforcement, you're going to get that law enforcement response. And, of course, they're knocking for 5 minutes, like Jeff said, you know, soliciting this guy to come out of the room. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. Here's what I teach, and so what I teach, it's like, hey, you take it or leave it. But if you hire me as your legal advisor, then what I'm going to, you know, tell you to do, my legal opinion is that if you have a person who is, you know, who's going through a mental crisis and they're by themselves, you know, in their domicile, in their residence, like there is really no, generally speaking, almost never there's a reason to push in. Because my feeling, number one, you don't have a legal obligation. Right. There's no duty to by government officials to save this person from themselves. I'm not trying to be callous. I'm trying to be practical. I'm also trying to save lives, because not only do all law enforcement officers not have a duty to save that person, they may have, you know, there might be some moral duties and a professional duty. You know, I don't want to discard that. But the other thing is, my viewpoint on it, at least empirically, is that if a person is by themselves and they're contemplating suicide, they almost never do it. I mean, statistically, it's very, very low, right? I mean, one or two people will actually have the gumption, you know, to do it. But if we put a law enforcement officer in front of them that is armed and has that, you know, and they will, it's easier to attack a police officer and do the suicide by cop than for them to kill themselves. And I believe that studies will probably help prove that that's correct, that a lot of people, sometimes more people, die at the hands of the police under suicide by cop than if you would just left those same people alone and they would have gotten through it with time the next morning, they, you know, and so forth. But the point is I believe LAPD, if I'm not mistaken, also LA Sheriff's Department, they do the door hanger mentality. Like they're not going in. I know this. I've spoken to these guys. Like they're not going in when nobody's in danger. A lot of big agencies, Las Vegas Metro, is not going in. So I don't know the facts behind this video. I only can be guessing here, but it does seem to me, Chip, that he's alone and by himself, and we have officers in there.
Well, his dad, you know, was in there talking to the cops, but with that exception, but he armed them with the information that he's in his bedroom and, you know, he's got a knife.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, and I love to hear Jeff's opinion on this because he's way more experienced on this. You know, I was chasing taillights for most of my career as far as a trooper, but I will tell you that from a legal point of view, I would love for those officers to be like, hey, look, it's let's just get everybody out. Let's surround and call out. Let's smoke them out. We have time. That's what I like to see.
Yeah, you know, actually, I have an entire chapter on suicide by cop in my forthcoming book on Thin Ice. And I delve into this issue quite extensively. And the reality is I commend the officers for doing what they did on the front end. They met with the mother who had left the location, and they obtained as much information as they could about this guy. He was schizophrenic, that he hadn't been taking his medication. His behavior had begun to escalate. And with that, they knew that there really wasn't anybody, like Anthony said, that was there was an exigent circumstances that warranted their immediate response and actions to protect somebody from serious bodily injury or death. But that thing being said, the real issue here is that, you know, there's about 18,000 law enforcement agencies in this country, and only about 15 to 18% of them actually do any type of mental health response training for their officers. So that there, many officers respond and they don't really have a grasp of what to expect. They don't understand the behaviors. They don't understand the best way to de-escalate and that sort of thing. And, you know, as Anthony had mentioned, you know, with the LAPD, we had the mental evaluation unit. So in this type of a circumstance, those are officers that are trained and work with mental health professionals, and they're teamed up with them. And then they can come and kind of do their thing. So when time is on your side, it's always about slowing it down, having the resources that are available that best understand how to de-escalate and get these people, and you know, in if need be, you know, a 72-hour hold for their mental health because they're a risk to themselves or somebody else, that sort of thing. And you know, ensure that these family, other family members can go back to their home and live safely. But you know, Chip, you make a great point that yeah, they could have slowed it down. But I don't know what resources they have, and I don't know what kind of training they have. The statistics right. are that they don't have those types of resources. They haven't had that type of training, and that we just send our police officers in to use their traditional yeah. tactics to deal with somebody that's you're not going to be able to reason with because of the fact that they're mentally ill. So that's a challenge facing law enforcement, you know, moving forward. Because the reality is when you're talking about officer-involved shootings, about 36% of all officer-involved shootings are of somebody that's suffering a mental health crisis.
Yeah.
That's a lot of shootings. And if, you know, when you're talking about the public criticism of law enforcement, I'm not suggesting at all that we can avoid a lethal force scenario in every situation. That's not what I'm suggesting. But if we can avoid it in half of those, you know, then we're talking about 18% fewer officer involved shootings. So that occur every year in this country. That's 18% fewer incidents that people can be critical of law enforcement. And vast majority of people, only about 20% of people have any contact, personal contact with law enforcement officers between the age of 16 and the day they die. So people get their opinions by what they hear from other people or what they see on television. So if we can reduce the number of these incidents that perhaps from an optic standpoint look really bad and challenging, you know, for the officers to justify what they did, although we know it may be justified, it's oftentimes very ugly and the average general population person doesn't understand. And then that's where the challenge is. So,
Jeff, your book, you're available at onthinicebook.com and jeffwinninger.com, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Can you give us the 10-second rundown on what people can find when they go to your website to try to order the book when it comes out?
Well, you can go there. You put in your email address. You'll be put on the list, and you'll be able to do the pre-order. So look forward to nice. Having you read it.
Love it. There you go, guys. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, competent, and accurate certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're watching the show and you have your own agency, your chief or sheriff, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. Before the commercial break, we were talking about how you can get a hold of, well, actually, Jeff's book's not out yet, On Thin Ice. But it's going to be coming out soon. It's going to be hopefully we'll be announcing the release date when that gets nailed down, coming up around September, I believe. But hopefully our show will be one of the first outlets that you actually announce the release date. And that would be really cool. Not to put pressure on you, Jeff, but I expect you fully to do that on the show. And Anthony Bandero, who's got Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com and trains all over the country, and he does the webinars. And, of course, there's one today. Normally on Wednesdays, occasionally you guys will change it. Anthony's not the only instructor that you'll see. You'll actually recognize, I think Travis Yates is doing some of those as well for you, right? You and Travis?
Yep, Travis will do some. I have another instructor, John Ween. He's very popular. As well, he's much better looking, so a lot of the ladies like him, so that's always good.
Yeah, you know, I am responsible for hooking you up with Travis Yates. I think that I would like to take credit for that.
No, you definitely take credit. The only thing I would say is that I knew, of course, I knew of Travis before you because he's a very popular guy, and just he was an icon for me when I was an EVOC instructor because he was really in that big in that space. But yeah, no, you hooked us two up, and we've been happy ever since. So thank you, you know, for the hookup.
You and I have talked before. Growing up, Travis Yates was always a guy that we looked up to. He was like a father figure to us as we grew up, we've appreciated that.
For sure.
Tell Travis I said that.
I will. No, but he's a grandfather figure to us. I mean, the thing is, it's just wait till he sees he's gonna kill him.
if he ever comes to Tampa, I'm not meeting with this guy in person. Not after that, yeah. Boy.
He's a good talker.
All right. Well, look, and we do have, it looks like, well, I'll announce the winner for the, on the next commercial break, for the two bells giveaway. But
the only thing I want to say, Chip, if you don't, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, we're good.
That last video, I don't want to, I know we have other things. Just the last thing, I think you did mention it, and it deserves mentioning before we forget it, is this whole running to the radio. Instead of running to your partner, this officer ran to his radio. That is a training scar. That is something that probably happens during DT's research, defense tactic research, and nobody calls them the cop out or whatever. Like they're grabbing the radio and grabbing the gun at the same time. That radio is not going to save you. We know that. The radio, there's the radio's not going to save you. The gun in your hand will save you, your baton, your taser. So that's a training scar that needs to be fixed, but we see it all the time.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because so let me just look. Training has evolved. It's gotten better. The training that is available today is better than it was in my day. Some of the guys from my era are teaching, and God bless them. I think that's great. However, now we're doing a lot of movement when we're shooting. We're not doing static shooting. You know, we're shooting at moving targets, and I don't mean just spinning paper targets. I mean moving targets, and we're moving when we shoot targets. We've made a lot of mistakes over the years. We've taught guys to catch their brass and not let it touch the ground because we don't want to get it, you know, dirty or the magazines, you know, we don't want to drop them on the ground. And, you know, we've made mistakes over the years that we've corrected because, you know, we've had dead cops that have had the brass in their hands or their magazine, you know what I'm saying? They just don't discard the stuff. So we've made mistakes, but high stress training is so important, and you behave differently when you're used to this stressful environment. So I really believe that we need more of that. There are instances, but not many, where you need to get on the radio. So you have an active shooter situation. You got backup arriving, and you don't want the bad guy with a rifle being able to take them out. So important to get on there, verbalize, and let people know what direction to come from. Or if you're trying to do, if it's a containment situation, you've got an armed guy and you need to move on that quickly. But other than things like that, what is the radio? Like you just said, Anthony, what is the radio? It's not going to do a thing for you. And your priority is that officer or the public and that guy, the active threat. And it just, I agree it's a training issue, but it needs to be nipped in the bud right away and needs to be addressed.
I'm glad you clarified that. You're very eloquent in that. You're basically, you handle here and now issues. If you have something that the radio does play a part, but it's that here and now issues. It's like that your life is on the line and you're running to the radio. Yeah. Or somebody else's life on the line. Yeah.
That sergeant needs to have a come to Jesus up close and personal, behind closed doors meeting with that subordinate, that didn't do what he should have done. That needs to be corrected.
Cool. I mean, the reality is I was very lucky. I did my probation with the LAPD down in 77th Division, and that was a flashpoint of the Los Angeles riots, the Rodney King riots back in 92. And it's very violent. Very violent community, oftentimes competed with Rampart Division for the most homicides in the year. It's like a 7 square mile division, and you'd have over 140 homicides a year. And I had an outstanding training officer. And the one thing he did tell me, he goes, when we're responding to a call and we're observing things, and we can request officers to respond to various areas to help assist us in the containment of the location or how better to respond. But when those rounds start rolling, there is nothing anybody's going to do to be able to save our lives. You take care of business. And when that happens, the only radio transmission should be you're calling the coroner for the suspect who you took down. Mm-hmm. And that's the frame of mind you have to have. That's the mentality you have to have, and the will to live. And when you're going to that radio, you're basically minimizing your ability to effectively address this. And You know, there's like, once again, I talk about a scenario where I was being shot at with an AK-47 while on a job working at 77th Division. And, you know, when those active rounds were going, you got a lot to be handling. You don't have time to be getting on that radio. You had to be doing certain things to save your life and to take down the suspect. So, you know, I talk about that incident and what I learned from it and how that just underscored the importance of my tactical training and my pre-planning, where I'd run scenarios through my head. So although it was the first time I lived this type of a circumstance, I had already run it through my head. So it was almost like second nature what I was doing. And the one thing I wasn't doing was getting on the radio.
Yeah. I wonder how the sound of that 7.62 whizzing by your head sounded. Gee, that's a wicked round. Hey, we've got just barely enough time to cover this last one, and I do want to get to this. So our next one, it's a video component. Rumble.com, this is Butters the Channel. Orange County deputy shoots an armed man who punches him multiple times.
Hold on. What you doing, bro?
I'm going to go ahead and go through this quickly. I'm going to go through my show notes. So you've got a deputy arrives. There's a fenced in area and a business is on, a business is there. He arrives at the fenced in area. Bad guy ends up walking out from behind the business, sees the deputy. And the so the Orange County deputy, and we're in Florida again, converses with a guy. The guy jumps the fence to talk to the deputy. But when he jumps the fence and the deputy's right there, he bends down and he picks up a bag and that I don't think the deputy even realized was there. And then he tries to run away. So now the deputy's got a hold of the bad guy and they're just swinging around. He's got his clothing, but the clothing's not tearing and getting away. The deputy's got a good hold of him. An object drops to the ground, which I thought was a gun, but it turns out it was nothing. But later on during the fight, the guy produces a gun. I don't know if he got it from the bag or for himself. The deputy flips him and does a face plant, and the gun goes flying in the parking lot, and you see it slide and skid, and it's there. And then the bad guy, while they're fighting, and the deputy's on top of the bad guy, bad guy produces another gun. I think he got that one out of the bag, but the bad guy intentionally flips it over his back, and it goes sliding in the parking lot. Both guns are on the parking lot, within view of the surveillance camera we're looking at, and they're not too far from each other. Then the bad guy gets up, starts pummeling the deputy's face as the deputy's like on his knees, nail him. Deputy stands up. Bad guy pushes him down on the ground, gets on top of him, straddles him, and he's just going at it, wailing the deputy. And now the bad guy gets up, runs over to the two guns, takes the first one, tosses it over the fence, and as he's going for the second one, the deputy gets his act together, stands up, draws his gun, sees the bad guy picking up the gun, as the bad guy's tossing it, deputy starts unloading on the guy, and the bad guy goes down. So that's the way it happens. I believe the bad guy actually ended up surviving. We got just seconds, but we'll go a little bit over on this. But Anthony Bandeira, your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I would love to hear Jeff, but the thing is, you have to see this video. It's very intense. All I can say is I'm not a use of force expert by any means, but I thought the deputy held his act together. I mean, he was in that fight. That was a very intense fight, and a lot of officers. Just a reminder for physical fitness: a lot of officers would have unfortunately probably tapped out before that because it was intense, and that cop was fighting for his life.
Yeah, the bad guy was 24 years old, and the cop did a knee kick early on, which I was impressed with the effort, at least anyhow. But yeah, young bad guy, but the cop determined. Cop had a will to survive, and he definitely.
And I just love the calmness too. Like, he took his shots. He was measured in his shots. He landed on target.
Yeah. Jeff, final words on this.
Yeah. Listen, the one thing that I picked up on was the bag that he had the gun in or the multiple guns in was on the opposite side of the fence than where the suspect was initially. And when the officer walked up, always be looking for things that are out of place, that you would own that abandoned bag to be able to look in it. And he would have found those guns, prior to the suspect being able to obtain them.
Great. Great show. Jeff Wininger, Anthony Bandeira. Shout out to Gauls, Compliant Technologies, GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, also Two Bells. Hey, guys, thanks for your support. We'll look for you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern. Thanks for your support and watching the show. We appreciate it.